So I was thinking of this term which was made long back in advertising, that if you're not buying, you're the product. And I was just wondering that if in the online space today it's still valid, because in the end I think you become a victim and not a product. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah. You mean the readers as, or users as they're now
Yeah.
called? Yeah, users. It sounds like you're a drug addict. Yeah.
Well, are the big now?
Yeah, like what you were saying, really, that they—that's what to Facebook they're.
That is certainly the case. I mean,
Data.
Actually, advertisers, in a funny way, matter less outside of Facebook, because lots of people run ad blockers. Lots of people don't
Yeah.
click on advertising. And like I said, there's a fascinating thing that people rightly said newspaper presses were this great obsolete technology that's too expensive to maintain. It's very expensive to put out a newspaper. What's weird now, it's very expensive to put out a website. And the architecture of a website is actually a massive overhead that you can't monetize by using advertising, because either people are running ad blockers or they're getting their stuff out of Facebook, so they're never going to see BuzzFeed's advertising because they're seeing Facebook advertising.
Except I'll plead the one exception is that we don't run display ads, so actually we luckily escape ad blockers
Yeah.
because our whole business model is based on native advertising, where we have a separate team who produce videos, who produce lists for brands. So to a certain extent, we don't make more or less money if I get more or less traffic. It's not directly linked like that. So we're trying to plow this third furrow, and hopefully for my career prospects it'll work out.
And in a sense, the subscription model of the FT or the Economist similarly tries, and indeed, of course, well, you don't sort of sell, not yet anyway, TLS underwear, but you're trying to develop a relationship which isn't just about.
Well, if you look, I mean, The Economist makes a lot of money out of events.
Yeah.
The FT makes money out of sponsored content and,
Yeah.
those papers that they do. In the end, I think BuzzFeed do it very, very well, that sort of native advertising content that a brand wants them to produce, that BuzzFeed thinks is good enough content to sit as content and an advertiser thinks is going to sell a product. And that's kind of clearly delineated, and it makes sense. The third way for newspapers is to become the advertiser themselves. So you have to have a product to sell. So The Sun has created Sun Bets because it wants to have an advert for something that it will own as well. And you'll see that in other areas. The Guardian runs masterclasses. The New York Review of Books has a book division.
Yeah.
So I think it's plausible for the TLS, for example, you could get to a situation where you do have other products. You are selling writing courses, or you're selling events, or you're selling something, because then you kind of cover your bets a bit on advertising. You're essentially saying, we'll try and make money at both ends of it. The Daily Mail did that massive thing. They still do it a bit, where they've got a deal with a clothing company, so every time they run a picture
Yeah.
of some celebrity, they find out what the dress is, who sells it, and then they have an immediate
Yeah.
click here to buy the dress. Massively time-consuming and person-consuming, and also soul-destroying for the person doing it.
I mean, just kind of imagine. I do think it's great that you can't really pay much money to The Guardian online, but you can pay £300 to learn how to be a journalist with The Guardian.
Yeah.
All these masterclasses that they're always selling to sort of train
And
you up.
overall, I mean, I don't know if this was lurking behind your question, but in a way, I think the user, the consumer, actually has more power, both economically and just generally. That you can now tweet at Jim to say you disagree with what he's said or how wonderful he is.
Let's do the latter.
Yeah.
Let's take another question. Let's keep working across. Gentleman there. That's you, yeah.
Yeah, great. Hi there. So one of the things that you've talked about with regards to the sort of collapsing advertising revenue is obviously there are fewer journalists and journalists are paid less. Also, there's a problem for young journalists, because obviously, if you want to get into the industry, you actually have to make money doing it. So two of the things that are sort of happening is, one, the local route to journalism is gone. If you want to go to journalism, you can't just go work for Manchester Evening News or The Express and Echo, because you don't get your stories out there. And secondly, there's almost a culture that you have to buy a ticket now. So a lot of people do the City Course or various other things to get in. So the impact of that, of course, is that if you're not from a sort of upper middle class background, where your parents can sort of give you their contacts in the industry to go do the internships, or you buy your ticket, there's no way in. What impact do you think that's going to have over the next 10 to 20 years on the industry?
I think it's a brilliant point, and it's entirely true. I mean, the BBC have always had a little bit of that problem themselves, which is that to get in at the BBC, you very often needed to be able to work in London for 2 years without being paid, or being paid very little. So you had to have a contact, you had to have very rich parents or parents who lived in the Southeast, there's a massive problem of the production line of good journalists, because you're going to have companies that want to invest in journalism from the beginning. So most newspapers run schemes. So News Corp, where I work, runs a scheme. The Daily Mail runs a scheme. They will do that, but that's not going to attract a large number of people. And they pay for it. You know, it's not done free, so there is money behind it. The local news thing is a real killer, because I do think that used to be a route where someone would have 2 years of doing journalism, of talking to people, knowing how a court report works, knowing what contempt of court means and why you should avoid doing it at all costs. That route is kind of disappearing. So the burden will go on to companies. You know, BuzzFeed will presumably run a scheme.
Yeah, so we have a real problem hiring people, because in their late 20s, for instance, 5 years ago when that cohort was going in, no one was hiring. There weren't the websites coming in to take up the slack, and there weren't the sort of people, you know, papers weren't hiring either. And the real problem is we're finding that people, if you've spent your 20s churning 10 articles a day, when we come along to interview you, we'll hire you, but we just need to see some evidence of you breaking stories or doing something original. They say, look, I'd love to do that, but I've never been let out of an office in 5 years. And you go, well, how can we take a punt on you? We don't know that. So one of the things that we're doing is we have a complete ban on unpaid work experience. We have a complete ban on internships that you get through asking from people. And we 3 times a year run a fellowship scheme where we take on 4 people straight out of uni, train them up for 3 months, and normally 1 or 2 of them gets a full-time job at the end of it. And certainly our news fellowship, where we've done that twice now, we've taken on 2 young female Londoners who both went to Brunel, not to City or anything like that, and they've been 2 of our best reporters that we've hired in ages, and they're absolutely killing it, both in terms of what they're producing journalistically and in terms of the amount of traffic they get. But it took a lot of management time and effort to do that.
Just coming to one consequence, you see this a lot, there's a real fastidiousness about face-to-face journalism. So there's a lot of reporters out there whose idea of contact is direct messaging someone on Twitter or Facebook. So the notion of knocking on someone's door and saying, I'm from so-and-so, would you like to talk?
Or even just ringing them. Or
we've had to offer landline training.
Yeah. That's right. And you see it sometimes, you know, the notion that a journalist might go to someone's house is met with horror among the Twitterati. What was that journalist harassing that person by trying to speak to them face-to-face? It's disgusting. I've had that. People saying that to me. Well, that's appalling behaviour to knock on someone's door, because that's not how people have... Now, if that person, if there was a tradition of people coming out of Manchester Evening News or wherever, that's what they would have done for... They'd have had a local patch, that have known everyone all over that place, that have known, that have knocked on doors, that have met people face-to-face, and that culture is slowly draining away.
It is indeed, says the man who started on the South London Press.
There you go.
Let's go right to the back, please. The woman with her hand up, obviously. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. The challenges you talked about in terms of newspaper journalism, can you also apply that to trade magazines and magazines in general?
I think magazines have a bit of a niche built into them. So I think that as we look at models that are potentially successful, magazines tend to have a focused audience. They tend to be a product that is glossy or beautiful, that translates well to a print and digital combination. So I think there's a certain part of the magazine audience industry that is kind of healthy now, and possibly the healthiest it's ever.
Well, there's some of it. I think it's basically the serious ones are doing quite well, but the glamorous ones are doing less well. And I think that's partly because there's just a lot more glamour, sex, clothing on social media generally.
Well, that's a really good point.
And Condé aren't doing so well, but the Statesman and the are doing quite well.
And here's the thing, and that's probably very true actually, because one of the things that some titles have found, and I think this is true to a certain extent of The Sun and The Mail, is their USP became the internet. And so if you wanted funny, gossipy, gabrous, aggressive, punchy, partisan stuff, you get it everywhere. And I think possibly that's true if you want fashion or glamour or that type of stuff. You're getting that on blogs, you're getting that on websites only. So if it's become so democratized that the internet has taken it for free, I think it's very hard to build a real clear business model around it.
Yeah, trade mags, just really quickly on those, I don't know about the business model, but journalistically, I think they're in some ways better than they've ever been, and it's never been a better time if you're working a trade mag to get your story out there, particularly housing sector ones. Health Service Journalism, Health Service Journal has basically been running the NHS story for the last year, breaking story after story after story, and because their journalists find it easier to get to national journalists than ever before, they get credit. Whether that does much for their business model, I don't know.
And that's kind of that's a terrifying point that I don't know the answer to, because it's such a good point about Health Service Journal. Does that make money?
Yeah, it
does. It does make money. In which case, well, there's a kind of benefit.
Well, I think it does.
It's sold at a massive profit.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's partly because it's kind of news that people will pay for, because they will benefit directly in a career sense, literally. You know, if you work in the Health Service, and the Health Service Journal keeps it anyway.